Hey, this is talking with Jean-François Denis at Meudon on 9 July 76. Well, can you tell me a little bit about your educational background?
Est-ce que je dois parler en français ou en anglais?
Oh, anglais, s'il vous plaît.
Anglais, yeah, that's not easy for me, but that's all right, I will try anyway. Yes, I was a student of the, what we call, École Normale in France. It is kind of advanced school, you probably know.
Right.
And, so when I was a soldier during the war, and after the war, I come back in France, and at that time I start radio astronomy with Steinberg. We were both at the laboratory of École Normale under Rocard.
Right. Was one of he's told me about that.
Yes, that was the same story that Steinberg, that Rocard was one of the men that was in charge of looking on German development, and he got there a old radar for following the V2 England. And so we were both interested in using this. And at that time we were just receiving the first papers of Rebel.
Right.
And so we saw that there was something to do with this. And we installed this old Würzburg mirror and with the French Navy, and we use it first for solar observation. And so I was interested from the beginning. I was a physicist of formation. I was no radio electrician, neither an astronomer. And I was more looking at the things in, as a physicist.
Right.
So I start working in this field and helping Steinberg, and more in charge of the theoretical study of
the interpretation.
That's right. So that was our first work, and there were my first very crude paper about what could be the origin of solar radio emission. At that time, we were mostly interested by solar emission. It was easier to get,
and, right?
And the wavelength that we had gave more result on this.
Well, can we talk about what you're in this Revue Scientifique article in 1946? What were your ideas as to what the emission might be?
Well, my idea was actually to try to compute what we call now the cyclotronic emission of solar. The idea was to look at how could the cyclotronic emission be seen with the electron gyrating in the magnetic field. And well, the idea was rather crude at that time, and if you from the physics of the thermodynamic of the problem, I suspect that if we want to get more that the thermal radiation, even with cyclotronic emission, we have to get this radiation out of the thing, because we did not have at that time much idea about plasma oscillation, and I figured out that the gradient of density might and magnetic field might help to get the radiation out of the sun. So that was the general idea of the cyclotronic. After all, this stuff was taken up much later on, maybe 20 years after, by the Roberts in Australia and things like that. But it was more or less the same idea at that time, but I did not have the real mathematic tools.
Did you know about the magneto-ionic theory of Appleton and this sort of thing?
Exactly. That's the only thing that I have at that time, The only thing that I have. And actually, soon afterward, I go to the United States for 2 years. I was at the National Bureau of Standards. I was working in ionospheric work mainly. And then...
Which years were those? Which years were those?
It was in 47 and 48. And then I met the Groot Reber that was there.
I see. That's right. That he was there then.
The friend that met Groot Reber. And Groot Reber show me about his first record of the radio sound.
Right.
And then I was working on this, and I was saw some people passing across. It was Posé and Van der Hulst.
Right, right.
And
so while you were at the NBS, you...
Yes, and the third one that I met was Fred Haddock.
Mm-hmm.
That was at the NRL at
right,
that time, and
right.
That one of my best friends there. And so I look at the record of Posé, of River.
Right.
And then I think it was, and I compare with, I met Covington also, and compare with Covington records.
Right.
And I think it was the first to recognize that there were at least two components in the radio burst, and the slowly varying component that I
right.
give the name to this.
Right.
And the other, the bursty component, solar noise.
I see.
The solar radio noise was observed already by Australian and British.
Right.
But actually, I saw that at under 400 megasec, it seemed that the quality of the record was changing, and the emission was not at all the same nature.
At higher frequencies.
At higher frequencies,
400.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, under 400. And so that there were different, completely different emission.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I had the record of Covington that was on 10 centimeter.
Right.
The record of Rieber on 50 centimeter.
Now, was this NBS data of Rieber?
Yes, yes. And,
or was this back in Wheaton, Illinois?
Maybe in Illinois or in NBS. Maybe in NBS at that time. He had a delay record in NBS.
Right.
Yes. And of course I had the record that we have here on long wavelength, and that the British had Ryle.
Right.
And so I compare all this, and I saw that there were really two types of emission.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Posé come across me and discuss with me this problem, and he was very interested. And then he go to Australia and paper of Posé and Yasbly. I don't know, a very early paper come with this confirming this. Type of division.
And when did you publish your idea? I mean, when did you publish?
I don't know if you have the record.
I suppose I have it here.
It was in my thesis.
Comme Trondu in 49, you talk about Covington's observations of sunspot numbers.
Mm, yeah, that's right. That was
three components. There's the thermal component,
yeah,
the slowly varying component, and the burst.
And the burst, that's right. That exactly.
So it must be when you came back to France.
Yes, I came back to France. I wrote this down, and but I actually studied this in 47, 48. And,
right.
I discussed this with Posé, with Haddock on this. And,
I see.
I think, of course, I studied this relation. I thought that we had a close relation in between with the slowly varying component with the magnetic field and the sunspot. And I tried to figure out what the area and the magnetic field come about in all this stuff.
Right.
And I forgot about Covington. That was one of the people that I met there. And it was a very good...
What else did you learn when you were in the States from that visit?
I was also very much working on ionospheric work somewhat, and there were McNish that was there, who was working on magnetism also, and the NBS was very excited at that time because it was the first time standards with NH3,
oh, yes.
You know? That
oh, yes, the ammonia measure.
The ammonia measure. Yes.
Or not the
not
ma- not
measure.
The,
not measure. Not the measure, but the first. And Towns was around, I think. It was the first paper. And so I got interested in the theory of this, so I make my thesis there, and I work on the thermal radiation, general theory of thermal radiation on this stuff.
In the corona.
In the corona, yes.
Yeah.
And so I wrote my thesis there, I think. And this thesis actually was not published, and it was only published by Fred Haddock in a translation in the, I don't know if you got this.
I have seen the translation, yes. NRL, it's an NRL report.
The NRL report, yes, only published part of my thesis because the other one was just typed. typewritten, it was in France somewhat disordered, and just after the war.
I think that is the first thesis in radio astronomy, actually. I haven't been able to find an earlier one.
Yes, right. In IBM. This is published in America. You know, right. For the first one that was published in America. And
Now, what did you find when you looked into the theory of the coronal emission and so forth?
What I find, first find that the solitary component could very well be explained by thermal affair, mm-hmm. but that the bursty things need some other mechanism. Mm-hmm. I did not know.
Well, right.
I did not get enough further. But I actually, you know, the idea about the thermal, the radiation study of a plasma was not at all well known at that time. And I remember that I studied the absorption and emission and the equivalence. And all this was, all this was very not known. I remember a paper by Shlovsky that is probably discovered most of the thing in radio astronomy, most of the idea, the new idea. But he make a very big mistake. I mean, I remember he make a paper in Nature where he did not realize that the coefficient of absorption that in the Hapleton-Hartree equation is actually the equivalent of the stimulated emission
negative sign.
So he was adding two things actually in this paper, you know, to compute the optical depth. And the things were not clear at all about all those fundamental concepts. So one of part of my thesis was try to clarify this fundamental concept on the nature of the ionized gas. Where a similar paper by Towns at that time that was published, but on the more galactic.
That was in 46, I think. That was a little bit earlier.
Right. A bit earlier, but on, that's right. But he was, Towns was discussing also the coefficient of absorption, but not the general Boltzmann equilibrium in the plasma.
Well, where does your work fit in with Smerd's work, which came along a little bit later, I think?
Probably pretty close, but completely independently.
Completely independent. And did you reach similar results on the nature of the transfer in the corona and so forth?
Oh yes. We have exactly the similar result. So that I think the first to see that it should be a bright ring at short wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
Was very well discovered afterward. That the sun should be very oval and not round, that most of the model were giving, and that the temperature should be, it was reflecting on long wavelengths instead of, the temperature should be, equivalent temperature should be less than the electron temperature on long wavelengths.
I see.
This type of thing that you get out of the study. And I give some idea about what could give the burst, but I don't think that they are really of value now. You know, I try to figure out very complicated mechanisms to did the burst. I don't think they are really ready now.
I noticed a paper here in Compte Rendu in 49 when you talk about the expected brightness is 5 times less than people had said before. Is this what you were referring to? Is this relative to what Shlovsky had predicted? I don't have it noted here.
I don't remember.
the expected specific intensity or brightness temperature should be 5 times less than what people had said before. Do you remember what that was relevant to? This came from an abstract.
Yes, because when you write the Boltzmann equation to get the thermal emission, you have the index of reflection that play a role.
Right.
And this index of reflection was not taken into account at that time. And when you are when you use the Appleton artery equation, then in some region, the index of refraction goes to zero,
right.
And so that makes
intensity so much the frequency dependence of the index of refraction.
Yes, that's right.
Was not considered properly.
Yeah, that's right.
I also noticed that you gave a paper at the IAU meeting in Zurich in 1948, which is the first one after the war.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could remember what the reception for radio astronomy was at that meeting. Was it sort of just something that was a minor little thing at the meeting?
What, 48?
This was talked about in an article in Observatory magazine. And apparently you gave a paper on burst and burst theory. But did you go to that meeting?
Yes, in Zurich. I was
right.
In Zurich. I don't remember what the paper could
Well, have. I was just remembering. Can you remember, though, how radio astronomy was looked upon at that time?
Yes. No, I don't remember, really. I don't remember, really. Zurich time. I was just coming back from the US, and I was about to leave for Dakar. I don't remember.
Okay.
No, I could try to remember if you are, and could write to you eventually.
Okay.
I will notice.
Well,
and so if ever I remember something, I can.
Okay.
I can
very good.
To you.
Very good.
Now
you gave a paper at a meeting of the American Astronomical Society in 1948, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yes.
Where was that?
Pittsburgh, maybe, or something like that. I don't remember exactly.
And how was this?
I thought it was well received by the physicists, mainly.
Mm-hmm.
Physicists, cosmic ray physicists, and people like that were interested by those problems.
And were they at this meeting of the AAS?
Excuse me?
Were they present at this meeting of the AAS?
Yes, there were several physicists interested in this problem of radio mm-hmm. emission. Yes, I remember there were several questions I cannot tell you, but
right.
I remember that I was presenting more as a study on the relation with magnetic field and with sunspot and things like that, and that was rather well received. And
right.
That makes me interested.
What about the solar optical astronomers? Were they listening to this paper, or was it sort of just a different camp?
I would say I did not have much connection with the solar astronomers. Maybe from McMath, but not much. The reception was really very active. I remember meeting physicists in Cornell, meeting physicists in Chicago, meeting all the people in RRL, even in LBS, we were people interested. But I don't remember that the astronomers were really.
Okay.
It was like in France, more or less, you see. There was not much response in French astronomy about all these things.
Mm. Was there in the French physics community, though? Or?
Well, not a little bit, but we have mainly contact with the British and
with the foreign radio astronomers.
Foreign radio astronomers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of cosmic rays, you mentioned in Compte Rendu in 49, you talk about how the electrons that originate in the solar burst may contribute to the cosmic rays detected at the Earth. Although at that time, of course, the electrons had not actually been detected in the cosmic mm-hmm. ray flux. And you talked about how the radio stars may contribute to the constant component of the cosmic rays. You said there was a solar component and a constant component.
Yeah, yes.
Uh-huh. So what were you thinking about these radio stars? There were a few of them known at that time.
Actually, I was thinking at that time of what was proved afterward, and that was, and the idea is... given to Shlovsky, that the background radio emission could be a background of cosmic ray. That was my mm-hmm. idea. I was pretty much certain of this, but I could not, I had not enough thing to to publish this, because I don't know, make calculation or things like that, you know.
So, I see.
But I figure out that could be quite possible. I remember I wrote a paper in an African review, but I could not even find it now, certainly. But I remember I gave this idea as a possibility. But it was just a possibility, you know, as people are thinking of. But I could not say that is a real, what I call in, we call in French a ballon d'essai. But it is not a really, it is an idea, but it was not really
a solid, well worked out.
I think Shrovsky makes the point that I think it was the first to make this point.
And Ginsberg also.
And Ginsberg, and I think they are correctly, they should be correctly given this credit.
Because but now, what mechanism of emission were you thinking of for the cosmic rays?
I was thinking of a kind of synchrotron that I did not really... because it was the same idea of a magnetic field, you know. I was thinking of cyclotron, and
if you have higher energies, then you have higher frequencies.
Yes, that's right. But I think we had to wait here to the work of Leroux that was really calculating the cyclotron radiation. We should be given credit for this, I think, in such paper, because as I did not calculate this, I consider that those ideas were really just ideas. But I remember in my thesis at the publication 49, I did try to figure out if there were relation between the radio emission and cosmic rays. And but at that time, the cosmic rays were just, I think, what was the result? The neutron monitor? I think it was just the neutron monitor of Simpson. Neutron monitor, I think.
Now, which result are you referring to?
The relation between cosmic rays and the radio, you know, radio emission between Covington data.
Well, at that time, I think it was known that there were particles that came a couple days later, after a burst, right?
Yeah, the Forbush decrease and things like that.
Right.
I remember discussing with Forbush about this.
Right.
Yes, but there were also neutron monitors.
Oh, I see. I don't know about that.
Bonjour, monsieur.
The neutron. Bonjour, monsieur.
Bonjour.
C'est Monsieur Gulliver.
Oui. what is your name?
Woody Sullivan.
Woody. Sullivan.
Right.
Sullivan.
C'est ça. Pour ça, je connais vous. Je pense que
c'est qui. So there was this neutron monitor data from Simpson, you know.
And oh yes, right. Simpson.
Simpson were doing this. That's why the cosmic ray physicists were interested in my talk when I pass across all those people, because I thought there might be a connection between the Covington data and the and the neutron monitor that was moving back and forth, you know. So that was the idea at that time, you see.
Could you make a note about that African paper that you wrote? And see if maybe if you can find that, because that would be interesting to me.
We have to write to Dakar, I remember today.
Okay, now here's an interesting paper. Auger, Dodin, Denise, and Dodin in Confrondu in 49, in which you talk about how the high-energy cosmic rays show a sidereal variation which correlates with the galactic background at 64 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
Now... What was going on there?
You know, people were looking at large shower, and they did find that there were a maximum of the shower at the passage of the Milky Way.
I see. In sidereal time.
Sidereal time. So it was my idea always that this cosmic ray background, this radio background was...
Right.
Of the origin was the cosmic ray, so I tried to link the two things, you know.
I see.
You see?
So you were not involved in the cosmic ray work?
No, actually. I was not involved. I was just doing this idea of the team that might be interested to look for more cosmic ray relation and radio.
Now, did this effect hold up in later years in the cosmic rays?
I cannot tell you. Well, but these things are so much changed in cosmic rays now.
I'm not familiar with...
I don't think really.
Yeah.
I don't think
I've never heard of it before.
I know that people look after I could try to figure out what is the situation now.
Okay. So, the next paper I see here is in 1950, where in Annales d'Astre Physique you give an overall review where you say that the coronal theory seems to be established pretty well, that the chromosphere, however, seems to be showing a temperature at the base of the corona, which is much less than the optical people had derived, and that there was some problem there.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
That was largely the result of my thesis that was publishing in France in a usual paper. As I told you, my thesis was not published, so it was a straightforward calculation from the temperature, and I show how we can deduce the electronic temperature down in the chromosphere just using short wavelength, radio wavelength. But the idea at that time was Piddington was doing more or less the same job, I would say. You see, I published it late, in 50, and the idea was when I was in the state, actually, all the calculations. So, but it was more or less the same idea. I could not say now. You know, the model, it was one of the first models that was done, and this model was refined several times. I don't know where I stand now, but it was certainly the first model of the corona and the chromosphere that that was done, together with the Smerd model and Piddington.
Right.
And that, you see.
Now, the solar theorists who were working mainly with optical measurements, did this bother them at all? Did they pay any attention to
at that time, they start being paying attention. I remember Pip in Holland, for instance, you know, the Jaeger.
Oh, yes, like right, the Utrecht.
Utrecht Pip, yes, were interested. I would say the Utrecht Pip were really interested in this.
Right.
Not see if there were other people really, maybe in the state.
Maybe Unsold, possibly?
Maybe Unsold, yes, maybe Unsold, yes. Yes, maybe Unsold. This was Giovanelli, probably, in Australia, you see? Giovanelli in Australia. Maybe in England people are doing some work on this. But mainly a radio astronomer was doing the job, I would say.
Yeah.
Mainly.
Okay, so once you got back to France, what was the observations that you were working with to try to interpret? It looks like you've been, in general, working on the theory of the coronal and the sun's atmosphere in general.
Yes.
But there were some experiments which you did with Blum and Steinberg, right, which you worked on. For instance, I have one here in which you had very short time bursts, very short duration bursts,
yes,
and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And another one here, this is 51, where you talked about the explanation for those bursts, namely a shock entering the corona with a magnetic field which was enhanced due to the sunspot and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I gather that you were the theoretician for this group, more or less.
Yes, that's right. Yes. So at that time, we tried any idea. You know, I could not say those papers are really of value. They were papers that I wrote with Kundu that was of more value.
Well, that must have been a good bit later, though.
But it could be later, yes.
Yes, I have that one in 57.
I see. Ah, yes, that's right. On E layers and the relation with E layer. That was for the. Yes, for 67, no. 57?
Yes.
Ah, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. I see that in the Journal of the Physics of Radium that you wrote an article about general free emission and so forth. So
yes,
it looks like you were going into the basic physics.
Yes, that was the basic physics of the ionized medium. And, yes, that was exactly. That
were there some new results in that?
No,
paper?
That was my thesis written for the physicist. You see, and
I
the
see.
Other was my thesis written for the astrophysicist.
Right, and then you had one written for the Americans in English.
yeah, that's right.
At NRL too.
Yeah, that's right. There are some additions, but it was not really a new idea.
Can you tell me a little bit about what the modus operandi was, more or less, for this group? It seems like I see Bloom, Denise, and Steinberg over and over here.
I see.
I mean, how did you work as a group? Who did what and so forth? And how did you decide what to do next?
Yeah, the group was... the group started at the Ecole Normale, as Professor Steinberg told you, with Bloom and Steinberg, and I came here from Africa because I spent a long time in Africa. And so I came there, I was more or less related to this group, and I started working on this earlier paper. Then I go back to United States.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I come back, I stay less than one year, I think, 51, where we look at this burst and things like that, and Steinberg and Bloom are still working together. And I go to Africa still again, you see, and I spent 3 years there in Africa. And I was doing ionosphere and also bring with me a radio and a radio receiver, solar observation on a metric wavelength. And I was trying to look if there were variations in the slowly varying component on long wavelength also, you know, at such a burst.
Why did you go to Africa?